Translation: Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative, yet there is no one who is not connected with him. He does not regard anyone as very favorable or abominable. We respectfully worship the remnants of his foodstuff, and we vow to accept what is rejected by him. Purport. Kashyapa informed his wife that just because Lord Shiva happened to be his brother-in-law, that should not encourage her in her offense towards him. Kashyapa warned her that actually Lord Shiva is not connected with anyone, nor is anyone his enemy. Since he is one of the three controllers of the universal affairs, he is equal to everyone. His greatness is incomparable because he is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said that among all the devotees of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is the greatest. Thus, the remnants of foodstuff left by him are accepted by other devotees as Mahaprasad, or great spiritual foodstuff. The remnants of foodstuff offered to Lord Krishna are called prasad. But when the same prasad is eaten by a great devotee like Lord Shiva, it is called Mahaprasad. Lord Shiva is so great that he does not care for the material prosperity for which every one of us is so eager. Parvati, who is the powerful material nature personified, is under his full control as his wife, yet he does not use her even to build a residential house. He prefers to remain without shelter, and his great wife also agrees to live with him humbly. People in general worship Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, for material prosperity, but Lord Shiva engages her in his service without material desire. He simply advises his great wife that of all kinds of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest, and greater than that is the worship of a great devotee or anything in relation with Vishnu. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Procharane Nirvishesha Sanyavadi Paschitade Sitarane. So there are many instructions in this chapter about householder life. Before, we were getting them from the viewpoint of Kashyapa and his relationship with his wife. Many of them were things not to do, like committing illicit sex or so-called illicit sex at the wrong time. But now we hear from Lord Shiva. Well, we hear about Lord Shiva's marriage to Parvati. And he is characterized by renunciation. In fact, he is famous for acting very strongly and in a controlled way in the exact same situation in which Kashyapa failed when Lord Shiva was agitated by his wife, Parvati, for having sex. Anyone else would have been agitated, but he was not. And that's offered in the still in the classic Hindu grammar as example of the word dira. To understand definition, if we get an example, then it is very clear. So to give an example of one who is controlled, Lord Shiva is the example in relation to Parvati. So, we sometimes say that the wife should not be used as a machine for sense gratification, but one should protect her and engage her in the service of Krishna. So, the wife of Lord Shiva, she is the greatest machine for sense gratification, not just for her husband, but for everyone. Because she is actually the personification of the whole machinery of the material nature. Whatever you want, you get it from her. She is the Maya. So just we can imagine that Lord Shiva is intimate with her, and she's under his control, so he could get anything from her. Prabhupada says, but not even a house did he ask her to build. He prefers to remain without shelter, and his great wife also agrees to live with him humbly. Well, why is that? Is he foolish that he has a wife who's very, very powerful and could provide him any kind of sense gratification? Why doesn't he take advantage? What's the matter? Is he sorry about something? No. Because he's the most self-realized, self-satisfied soul. He is the greatest devotee of Krishna. So what else is there to need when you have the bliss of Atmarama, self-satisfaction? He doesn't need a house. We need a house for the comfort of our body, but he's completely beyond the body. We need a wife because we are incomplete. He's complete in his meditation on Lord Vishnu. He is in the highest ecstasy. And he is also wrapped up in the mood of devotional service to help all living entities. He's always helping the most fallen living entities. So he's engaged in welfare work, trying to raise them gradually to the standard of Vishnu worship, as he recommends. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. Devi means his wife. He instructs his wife. Kasyapa was saying, oh, beautiful wife, oh, queen of the home. And they were just, although he was trying to lecture her, he was actually in her grips, in the grip of Maya, praising her to do whatever she wants. But Lord Shiva, when he speaks to his wife, Devi, he's giving her instructions. Jistavyat yasi shushroni harer adbhuta karmana mahatman britta brityanam nikspriyana mahatmanam. Another place, he's saying, oh, beautiful Devi, oh, wife of mine, just see the greatness of the Vaishnavas. They are servants of the Lord. They are very peaceful, and they're very rare to find. And Prabhupada, and he discusses that's in the case of Chitraketu. Chitraketu, he came upon the marriage relationship of Lord Shiva and Parvati. And they were sitting, like described here. Oh, no, actually, they were sitting in the company of other sages. Even Narada Muni was there, many big sages. And Lord Shiva was there, and his wife was on his lap, and he was embracing her. But obviously, it was not some kind of sense gratification, because why would he have done such a thing in front of the great sages? So neither were they disturbed by it. It is inconceivable to ordinary person, but at least the great sages were not bewildered or embarrassed. So Chitraketu, he also was not insulting towards Lord Shiva, but he was amazed that, just see, Lord Shiva, he's acting with his wife like she's ordinary wife and he's an ordinary husband. It's amazing. And he made some remark. So then she was offended and she cursed him. And he accepted the curse very humbly. So after seeing the way he accepted the curse, then Lord Shiva said, Prabhupada, understanding the mind of Parvati, he said that actually Lord Shiva was saying, my dear wife, just see, this Chitraketu has defeated you. You're very beautiful in your bodily feature, and you're glorious as the mistress of the material nature. But I think this devotee has just outdone you with his glorious personal qualities, because you have cursed him, but he is remaining so nice and surrendered, and he's unattached. Narayana paraksarve nakatashana bibhyate swarga apavarga narakeshu apitul yarta darshana. He doesn't mind if you curse him or not. He's so Krishna conscious. He'll always remember Krishna wherever he goes. So there Prabhupada says that we can see, even among the great personalities, among the woman is less intelligent than the man, and Parvati was showed some womanly weakness. But therefore, Lord Shiva is instructing her. He's protecting her. He's not taking advantage of her, giving her these good instructions. These instructions are so famous that they are eternal instructions for everyone. Like this one, Prabhupada refers to Aradhananam Sarvesham. When he spoke to his wife, it wasn't some prajalpa, it was something to be memorized and remembered by all devotees forever. And it was said into the Srimad Bhagavatam on different occasions. This is a husband talking to his wife, that everyone can come and listen. This is a husband sitting with his wife, that everyone, great sages, can come and listen to what he is saying to her. Not that it has to be hidden because it's nonsense. So, can't imitate, but he's a householder, so also that we can try to follow, especially the renounced feature here. He's definitely involved with his wife, very intimately, but together in renunciation. Renunciation in the household ashram doesn't mean that he's renounced and he doesn't want anything to do with her because she's Maya Devi. Because we say that in a pejorative sense, some woman, oh, she's really Maya Devi. But Maya Devi herself is actually very nice. And Lord Shiva likes to instruct her. So she wasn't the way we say Maya Devi. And Lord Shiva was saying, oh, here's Maya personified. Get out of here. I want to meditate. But this Maya Devi, he instructed. And she served him in Krishna consciousness. So they were renounced together. She was the daughter. Of course, Parvati has different births. But in one birth, she's called Himavati because she's the daughter of the king of the Himalaya. And so she was a very opulent princess. But when she married Shiva, then she had to become like him, come just like a poverty-stricken person and serve him. But she was very happy. So in Hindu culture, the men, they pray to her for a husband like Lord Shiva. Is that right? And the women pray to Lord Shiva? No. The woman prayed to Lord Shiva for to her husband like him. And the girls do. And the boys pray. Oh, I don't know, I get it mixed up. The girls are praying. Anyway, they're praying for following the model of Shiva and Parvati. Of course, Lord Chaitanya, he used to sport with the girls when they would do that and spoil their offerings and tell them, don't worship Lord Shiva for a good husband. You worship me. He was playing with them, although he was actually the worshipable object. Worship me or I'll curse you that you'll get an old husband who already has 7 children. So they were so obedient to Lord Chaitanya, they would stop their worship of Lord Shiva. But they were doing that ordinarily. And the gopis also, they worship Katyayani, another name of Maha, another name of Maya Devi. So they worshipped her for being united with Krishna, the best husband. Therefore, we should be renounced like this, with the wife. That means with children also. Renounced means to engage everyone in the service of Krishna. We want to please Krishna, we want to please the spiritual master, we want to please the sadhus in this tradition of what is real family life. We don't have to please somebody else's idea of American family life or some other family life. It's not going to please others. Of course, we don't want to deliberately make it, antagonize people. And neither is it our philosophy that in the name of being renounced, you live and you dress niggardly or you are dirty. Prabhupada, in one of the memoirs we got from Jamuna Devi, she was saying that in England, she would come before Prabhupada, she had only one or maybe 2 saris, very simple saris, white with a little border. And so she would iron and clean those saris every day and come before Prabhupada. And he would say, Jamuna, you look so nice, you have so many beautiful saris. She said, no, Prabhupada, I only have... I don't have many beautiful saris. So he said, yes, you do. You always look very nice, and your tilak is very clean. And actually, she tells that he would do this. She was his servant, and she would appear before him with his other servant, who was in Maya, getting into Maya at that time, a boy, named Purushottam. So at that time, he wasn't shaving, and he would sleep in his sweater, sleep in his clothes, and come before Prabhupada, messy. So Prabhupada was praising her like that, and he was indirectly chiding the other boy. So he said, no, she said, I don't have many beautiful saris. He said, yes, you do. Every day you look so nice and clean, and your tilak is so beautiful. What do you think, Purushottam? Doesn't she look nice with her tilak? Who has the best tilak? So he was being shamed by his bad appearance. So maybe we only have two saris, but everything is neat and clean. Maybe we have a small room for our family, but we keep it neat and clean. That's still not going to please the Americans. Nothing, we can never please them. So we do everything neat and clean and actually wholesome according to Krishna consciousness. But we cannot abandon what Prabhupada has given us. In the name of household life, we shouldn't try to accumulate many, many things like that. But if it's a little simple, that's all right. And we're engaging our energy in the service of Krishna. And what is our service? Working in the ISKCON movement, day and night. Preaching Krishna consciousness. Somebody, some so-called devotee who was gone away from the following the missionary activities of ISKCON, was saying, oh, you ISKCON is getting bad publicity. I told you all along, what you people have to do is you have to engage in social work. If you want the public not to be unfavorable toward you, you should engage in social work. But maybe if we did not only that, but 100 other things, we could actually start to please the public. But then would we please Srila Prabhupada? Not if we did so many things like that. And would we remain Krishna conscious? How can you be Krishna conscious if you're doing mundane activity? No, the family activity is some kind of Krishna consciousness. Working for the deity, going out on Sankirtan, cooking in the kitchen for Krishna. If a wife can cook, better she doesn't just cook for her husband, but cook for everyone, for the deity, for the devotees. These kind of activities. In connection with all these teachings that we're regularly going through, I saw a reference the other day. I was reading in the 7th canto, in the first volume, there, Prabhupada, in the purport, he's discussing how the different ashrams should live and work. And he stresses the grihastha should do deity worship. And he says that if he doesn't, he'll fall down. And then, in that connection, he says that while the husband is doing deity worship, and the wife should take care of children, and then he specifically says in the purport that just like a teacher in a nursery takes care of many different children, aside from her own, she can do this. He was studying this as it's like classical activities. He said the brahmachari, he may preach and travel with sannyasi, the grihastha may do this, and he cited that for the woman. Of course, they're not the only things that we can do. They're not stereotypes. But that idea is again reinforced about a woman performing nursery activities for more than one baby. So these activities are pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, and they may not be pleasing to others, but what can we do? We have to please him. So are there any questions? I'll stop a little early. Now we're on the regular schedule, huh? Quarter after is the... Okay. Yes?
If we can never please the Americans by their extravagant material standard, then how do we remain pure at the same time make Krishna consciousness popular in America?
Well, we have to educate them in that what we're doing is actually good. So that's why our main... Everything we do is a kind of education, our main thrust. Some religions, they want to work with the poor and the needy. We can see that's beneficial work, but that's not for a religion. If one actually has transcendental knowledge and he's working in a spiritual movement, then he has to disseminate that knowledge. People have to know they're not this body. That extravagant living is not best at all. So we have to go on with this education, dissemination, and example also. And although it may seem, well, how are they going to receive this education? But that's not the point. The point is that's our duty. We've got to educate them to accept this Krishna conscious way of life. Now they may be doing exactly the opposite. Therefore, that's what preaching is. Of course, we see it. We see it happening on a small scale. When I was in Boston, there was some nice engagements in different parts of New England in people's homes. I just missed an engagement I would have liked to have gone to at that man Frank Wright's house. Is a man who came here and he's written here. He lives in Mount Desert, Maine. And the Niranjana, the Boston Temple president, was saying, I think we can say that now we have an ISKCON temple in Mount Desert, Maine. And the man was very pleased because he's trying his best. All his children are five children, they're like devotees, and he's a devotee. So anyway, there was an engagement in some other place, Biddeford, Maine, I think it's, and he traveled about 3 hours to get there, and another 20 people were there, all New Englanders. So these are small gains, but we have to try to increase Krishna consciousness as much as possible. We're not going to dilute it. I was reading one book, a sociological study of the different new religious movements, and they were describing the Krishna consciousness movement and how we're not interested in, said a lot of, although that we're propagating this movement very widely by chanting in parks and public places and distributing books in airports and other places, said not many people are attracted by it, not many people are taking it. I forget the phrase, but as they have that attitude towards the Krishna conscious movement, he said, similarly, the Krishna conscious movement has the same attitude toward them, that if they're not really serious, we're not going to recruit them. And how we have a period of, you have to, for 6 months or a year, you have to be on probation before you get initiated and everything. And he used one phrase that I liked. He said, the Krishna conscious movement, like the Marines, is looking for a few good men. So, we want quality people. So, and we have a quality product. So it may not be that everyone will take to it. But we're not going to then sell this diamond for 5 cents just so that somebody can take it cheaply. They have to agree to not be extravagant. Give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meeting. Now, that doesn't mean that you only eat some sparse food, 6 chickpeas. You can eat very nicely, opulent prasadam, but not extravagant. As Prabhupada would say, sumptuous, but not too much. So we want to educate them like this. At least we shouldn't think like that, well, somehow or other, I'm willing to undergo this austerity, but even I don't know how I'm going to continue with this austerity, but somehow I'm doing it. But I don't know how other people will take to this austerity. They're living so extravagantly. Somehow or other, I'm a devotee, but I can't expect others to become devotees. That would be a weird consciousness. And the next thing you do, then you start feeling that actually, maybe we shouldn't be devotees like we used to be. We should try to merge more into the society so we won't cause friction. Yes, you'll be able to merge. Maya will allow you to merge until you'll be completely indistinguishable from a karmi. Then you'll be successful. We may put on this external disguise to do some public relations, or the devotee puts on his wig and goes out and sells a painting. That's for preaching. Just as when we manifest all this for preaching. But the devotee puts on the wig and he goes out and sells a book or sells a painting. But then when he comes back to the temple, takes off the wig and he's a devotee again, if possible. So we agree with the principle that you can be completely disguised so no one will see your devotee. But for preaching. But if for a different reason you start thinking like that, that I always have to hide my neck beads and hide everything so no one will think I'm a devotee, then you'll start getting more and more like that internally. And you'll think success in life is to go around and no one, I become successful, nobody knows I'm a devotee. I've gone a year without anybody saying Hare Krishna, and I didn't say Hare Krishna. I'm completely indistinguishable. No. We have to show America what is a devotee. Just like black people, what are they going to do? They can't paint their skin white. So we are a devotee. People should see we're a devotee in one way or another. Not that we hide being a devotee because it can't be accepted widely. And even if people can't take to it by holding big festivals and distributing books, Nehabi Kramanastosti, Prachavayana Vijite, Svaltmapyasya Dharmasya, Chayate Mahatubaya, they take a little bit. They like the Rata Yatra, they like the festival, come here once a year, take some prasadam at an open house, read one of our books. Then they'll become saved from the greatest danger at death. Other questions? Comments?
Yeah.
Well,
what's the standard to judge against?
The standard is just that you do your best engaging body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna in the best way. You take the example here at Gita Nagari. You came here and you've always been so careful as part of the preaching that you have nice relationships with the neighbors and that nobody here do anything in the community to give people the excuse to dislike us. We're already strange, but if we cannot give them excuses to dislike us, that's also good preaching. And you've been successful in that, and it will continue to be successful. However, despite all your care, now some big negative propaganda has been dumped in the area that these people are completely crazy in so many ways and they do all kinds of criminal acts. So you have tried to do your best, so why should you take a relative view of it? Then you have to say, well, what can we do? This must be Krishna's doing. We can't stop these things one way or another. They're going to happen. The demons are active. So it's a fight. And in a fight, he makes a blow, then we make a blow back. So you have to see that this is the fight going on and not be disappointed that I did something wrong. We can't cheaply think that, well, everybody's a demon, anything we do is right, and if anything bad happens, it's just because they're demons. But if you make all arrangements so that there won't be unnecessarily agitation of innocent persons against us, but still, they're agitated by the demons. Then you just have to engage against the demons. But we have to maintain heart that, well, we did what we're supposed to do. The war is on like it's supposed to be. And let us keep preaching. Do our best. Try to make gains, but ultimately it's up to Krishna. But why should we think we're doing something wrong or that everything is failing? Of course, that's natural. If a house burns down, if we lose money, if there's bad propaganda, we feel despondent. How can we not? We're human. But then after the despondency, we have to be determined. And in that determination that comes after the human-like despondency, then there's also real reciprocation with Krishna, and we're only realizing what every devotee has always realized when he preaches in the material world. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't think he had gone wrong. He had done anything wrong. He didn't become disappointed, but he said he had so many enemies. He said, in India, there's my godbrothers and the Goswamis and the government. In America, it's the parents and the clergy, and to some degree, in both places, the government. And so I have so many enemies, he said. So he also had human-like response to that. He said, sometimes we become bewildered, thinking that at any moment the Kamsas may stop this movement somewhere in the world. But that he said that, indirectly comparing himself to the mood of father of Krishna, Vasudev, who felt so much anxiety over protecting Krishna from Kamsa. But Vasudev didn't think, well, Krishna's going to get killed anyway, or I've done something wrong. But he just was always wrapped up in taking care of Krishna, one way or another. The center is Krishna. Prabhupada said that he was talking about this in exact response to deprogramming and brainwashing propaganda. He said, well, as long as we keep Krishna in the center, then we're successful, even if it's a bad thing. He said, like when the time you talk about bad things happening to a Krishna-conscious community, what could be worse than when Krishna himself was present, the object that everyone wants to protect and worship, when he himself was endangered, it seemed, unto death, but in the clutches of the Kaliya snake. So Prabhupada said, for the residents of Vrindavan, this was bad news. But because Krishna was in the center, still they were thinking of Krishna. And so there was nothing ultimately to lament about or to cause them to be less Krishna conscious by that bad event. The event is bad, but Krishna is in the center, so then it's not bad. So when we have to defend our movement, when our movement is on people's mind, then that's good. We may wish it to go another way, but we're not in control. To the degree that we are in control, to keep things neat and clean, to keep our Krishna conscious image very nice, that we should always do. And we have to defend ourselves as best we can. But ultimately, things are in the control of Krishna. This more and more forces us, if we're at all sincere, if we're insincere, then when there's some difficulty, we may just leave completely and say, what's the use of fighting the whole American culture? Why don't I just merge into it? But if we're sincere, then we just think, I'm a servant, that's all I am. I'm a servant of the servant. I have to function as a servant of Prabhupada and the devotees, and just completely throw my lot in with the devotees and just serve. I'm not in this for sense gratification. Why am I disturbed? Because my peaceful sense gratification is disturbed? I'm just a servant, so let me serve. And then that means that we're driven into a deeper Krishna conscious state. Thank you. we say about the pious religionist, that if he's at all pious, when something bad happens, he prays, "Oh my God, oh God." But that can also be true for a surrendered devotee, that when there's difficulty in Krishna consciousness, then of course he responds, "Oh Krishna, Hare Krishna," because he's Krishna conscious. But still, he also turns in a more intense way towards Krishna, as Nanda Maharaj did when he was returning home and began to worry about the presence of the Putana. He began to think of Krishna very rapidly. So that's not a bad thing either. We don't want these troubles, but they come, and we take them as an opportunity to think of Krishna. If we don't have troubles, if everything comes our way, well, that's fine too. But we can't begrudge the negative side and think, well, this is Krishna conscious, to buy property, to have a successful festival, to realize all our aims, oxen program, building buildings, community. This is Krishna conscious. But when something happens against that, then we begrudge that. That's this experience I can't accommodate. But our philosophy does accommodate and does expect the both. And the pastimes of Krishna are filled with both. Easygoing life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. So now we're just near the weekend, another weekend practically getting into the heart of what they call in Washington Temple Krishna's Marathon. Krishna's Marathon. Krishna, Christmas Marathon. So you've heard enough the rhetoric. Everyone should be committed. Not be distracted by our marathon duties. At the same time, remember Krishna. A devotee in Boston was asking me, what is the most important thing that we should think of in the marathon? I said, well, in any situation, the most important thing is to remember Krishna. So we have to depend on Krishna while we do this marathon. But marathon, the word literally means not to stop, to keep doing something, like they have so many endurance marathons, a dancing marathon or a talking marathon or something, staying awake marathon. So as soon as the person in the marathon stops it, then it's over, the marathon is finished. So the most important thing about a marathon is to keep going, keep at it, not to let up until the designated time is over. But for a Krishna-conscious person, he has to both keep at it and remember Krishna. I've been talking with our traveling women's party, and they've been definitely going through difficulties getting themselves into the intense state again that they were in last month and performing the marathon. One of them was saying that it's a whole consciousness, and once I get into it, I know I can do it, but it's hard to get into this mood again. Although we were in it before, it means you just have to go all the time and no let up and just keep going. Get up, chant, serve. So if we just can get ourselves into it, then we'll be going, the momentum. Of course, most of us are weekend, a marathon. So we have to do this in this flurry of intensified opportunity that builds and builds practically from this day up until the next few weeks. Take the opportunity, we better, because mostly all around in our zone it's been a rather slow start. So it's really got to come through. And at least materially speaking, the opportunities definitely increase. The spirit increases and for Christmas spending. So I hope that Giranagari can rise to the occasion, a very successful Christmas marathon.
All right.
All glory.